I'll bet against a better team at home. I don't care who got it.
Three massages.
Oh, this is
Say athletes one more time. You can't say stuff like this on podcast, all right?
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, January 29th, 2010. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, two people who, much like Riley Cooper, have never been naked in front of 600 people. We got Phil Kegler.
I'm really disappointed about that for myself.
And Mike McCall.
I have, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's one thing you got on Riley Cooper. All right. We got a lot to talk about on today's show. We're going to start off talking about the Senior Bowl, Tim Tebow, what he's doing up there in Mobile. Talk about the controversy around his Super Bowl ad. I know we're all itching to talk about that. A little recruiting news, what we're qualified to talk about with that at least. Talk about some Florida men's basketball and make some Gator guarantees that will likely go wrong at the end of the show. So let's start off with the Tebow Senior Bowl stuff. McCall, you want to give us an update on how he's doing up there?
Mobile? Yeah, no reports have been good really, so far. The first couple days, I thought this was really ridiculous. There's a lot of talk about him dropping snaps from under center, which, I mean, how is that a big deal? Like, I understand that it doesn't look good, but does anyone really think that Tebow or any of these other athletes aren't going to be able to learn how to take a snap from under center?
It's concerning when you're out of college and like the basic act of a quarterback, though you can't handle that.
Yeah, but a lot of people have these problems at the Senior Bowl because you have a new center, you have an entire new offensive line, the whole system's different. And I believe it was the first day that most of these problems happen. I mean, when Tebow or any college quarterback, when they get with a center and they work with them for 2 weeks, it will be a very irregular thing to see a drop snap. I mean, he's going to be able to handle that. I don't care how many times he's run under center packages. And other than that, it's the usual stuff, talking about his long release and long delivery. That hasn't really been the biggest story to come out of the Senior Bowl about Tebow. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't really see how the snap thing is a big deal at all. For Tebow, it's really going to be the game, I think, like coming out and showing, you know, making reads against the defense and everything. All these individual workouts and all that, I mean, there are plenty of quarterbacks who have bad motions and bad releases and are able to make it, but it's because of how accurate they're able to be on the field during games, and that's what he's going to have to show during the actual Senior Bowl. I'm not sure, really, how it's going to go for him. We'll see. I mean, I kind of err on the side of giving him the benefit of the doubt normally, so I'll probably stick with that. But, I mean, a lot of the criticism he's getting is just ridiculous, and especially the snap thing bothers me because it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, it's just everything he does is so much more highly analyzed than anybody else. It's like, I think it was Mel Kiper, Todd McShay was saying, they've never seen somebody analyzed like this at the Senior Bowl. They've never seen an NFL draft prospect get this much criticism and this much just attention. So I think that makes everything seem a little bigger than it probably is.
Well, the weirdest thing to me is that coming in, I don't know how people thought that all these things were going to be different about Tebow.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know he's been working out, like he had 3 weeks or so, give or take, but you're not going to learn a new delivery in 3 weeks because it's not going to be polished when you came to the Senior Bowl. So you're going to just try to polish up what you can in your delivery, and that's how it's going to work. But when people get to Mobile and on the first day they're like, oh my God, his delivery is still not good.
Yeah.
He still doesn't read defenses very well. It's like, well, really? That's really not surprising. I mean, whatever. But to me, it's just like, what he's done is kind of what I figured he was going to do. The like outrage about it is what's so surprising to me. Yeah. Like, people were like, oh, it's so courageous of him to play in the Senior Bowl. And yes, because you have usually more to lose than to gain because you can only look bad in these kind of scenarios sometimes. But at the same time, it's like he really is pretty much the same player he was 3 weeks ago. Yeah. And I don't know why that's so surprising.
Yeah, and he's gotten better every day up there, they've said. There's also the report that he had like 103.5 degree fever the first couple of days, so that was kind of holding him down. So then he's gotten better.
Strep throat?
Yeah.
How do you play with that? Strep throat's horrible.
He's Tim Tebow.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and apparently he's gotten better every day. I mean,
he's
still going to be controversial until the second he's drafted, and even after that, it's going to be controversial. Like,
then it's just going to get worse.
Yeah. And then he's going to be highly analyzed and looked at after that. It's only going to get worse from here on out.
Yeah, people are going to scout his practices like crazy. After the first day, actually, I don't know which ESPN talking head, I'm going to refer to him in this category.
Not an analyst.
Had him as a fifth-round pick. Now, like, we can debate whether or not, like, some people think that's, like, how talented, how good he'll be, but, like, we all know that the draft's not necessarily about talent. It really, you just need one or two people that like you, one that like will take you, and then the other one to make them take you earlier. And I would bet all the money that I have that he'll be drafted before the fifth round, because there's no way like 120 picks are going to happen without Tim Tebow's name being called.
Yeah, I think so as well. What do we think of his potential as an NFL quarterback at this point?
He needs to go somewhere that's going to run the right type of system for him, which is not going to be a three-step drop type offense, a.k.a. please don't go to Jacksonville.
They have a Pro Bowl quarterback already.
Yeah, a Pro Bowl quarterback. How could you bench a Pro Bowl quarterback for a rookie?
By some miracle, they have a Pro Bowl quarterback. He needs to go somewhere that's going to take some risks with the offense, do something different, run a little bit more of a wide-open thing, use a little bit more spread. Hopefully go somewhere that has an established veteran quarterback who he can learn under. He doesn't need to go somewhere. He also needs to go to a good team, because if he goes to a bad team, there's going to be all the more pressure to play him early, get fans in the stands. That's especially going to happen in Jacksonville. And that's not good for anyone, because he's not ready now. Mm-hmm. I think everyone can agree on that. Yeah. That doesn't mean he'll never be ready, but he's not ready now. And he doesn't need to be forced into a situation as a rookie where he has to go out there and it hurts his development in the long run.
A part of that, too, also comes from where he's going to be drafted, because if somebody throws a first-round pick on him, there's a lot of first or even second round, there's a lot of pressure to play him because you're putting so much money in him.
Yeah.
So while he might not make as much money if he's taken in the third or fourth round, in the long run it could be a good thing because he can develop more. I've kind of come around a whole lot on this. For a while I didn't really know, and then I kind of buy into what Mike's saying. A lot of people have said that about if he's in the right system. And I've kind of tilted towards now I don't think he's going to be a really good NFL quarterback. Like, I think he'll try really hard. Yeah. I don't. It's like not really an indictment on Tebow. It's just I don't know if an offense can be built around him enough for him to be successful, or I don't know if like you could if you have to put him in a traditional offense, you know, something like that, if he could relearn a delivery or anything like that. So sadly, because I really like him, I don't think it's really going to work out down the road.
Yeah, my thoughts have always been that he's not going to be like a good starting quarterback. He's just that's never going to be him. But he's not going to like drop out of the league after a couple years, because he's going to try so hard. He's going to be so he's going to like you said, work hard enough. And he's Tim Tebow, so he's going to do that. Right. He'll be like a good backup quarterback. Look at Matt Leinart right now. I think that's sort of the situation he needs to fall into, behind a good established quarterback. Maybe in a system where he doesn't have to throw that much, but with a lot of talent around him where he can have time and hopefully he won't have to face the pressure that Leinart did. But something like that, a situation like that, basically.
Yeah, that sounds like exactly the kind of situation he needs to get into. I agree 100%.
Except he doesn't need to go to Arizona, all the party scene that Leinart has fallen into.
Yeah, that'd be rough. but he also needs like some really good playmakers around him, and being with somebody like Harvin would be good for him. You see what Percy did for his career here. When Percy was gone, it was pretty different. He needs to have somebody who's like that safety valve that he can get the ball to, and somebody he really trusts.
Yeah.
That's going to be another interesting thing is, like, I always felt like when he was here, other than Percy and maybe Caldwell and Murphy to a certain extent, he didn't really trust that many people. Like, I mean, Hernandez really grew into that role, and Cooper did too, but he would never really spread the ball around in pressure situations. It was always going to be one or two guys, or he was going to take it himself. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out in an NFL locker room. The whole Tebow dynamic in the NFL is
I haven't even thought about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just how big of a, not him personally, but how big everything around him has been built up to be, how that's going to be received in an NFL locker room, how he's going to handle that as the leader, because he can't really come in and be a leader as a rookie. I mean, here he came in, worked out with offensive linemen, did all that stuff to gain respect. That's probably the same tackle take in the NFL, but how that's received is going to be a big deal, and it all depends on which team he goes to. There's so many variables here that could go either way.
Yeah, I haven't even thought about him interacting with other players, because he's going to come in as one of the biggest, even if he's not one of the most talented, one of the biggest deals of a rookie in a long time, obviously the most heralded college player.
He's going to be one of the top five stars of whatever team he goes to.
Yeah, which
is ridiculous.
It's a shame, because he might not see the field for his first years. I don't know, it's going to be a lot of pressure on him, a lot of stuff to deal with, but fortunately for him, he is used to dealing with the hype, especially as it's come out this week with his Super Bowl ad. Somebody want to explain that so I don't get in trouble explaining it the wrong way?
Tim and his mom, Pam, are set to be in a Super Bowl ad for Focus on the Family. Mm-hmm. And they are retelling the story essentially of Pam giving birth to Tebow, because Pam was told by doctors to have an abortion, which which is now Tebow. So telling that story. It's obviously a pro-life ad. And there's been a lot of reaction to that.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, apparently Sarah Palin weighed in. I'm not going to read what she said because I don't care, but she did weigh in, which is interesting.
Good.
Really, everyone's been weighing in. Like, it's, again, one of those, like, Tim Tebow's crossing every spectrum because it's in, like, real news, like CNN-type things. Some of the backlash that I've seen coming from it, which I can kind of agree with, is not so much, like, people harping on him for taking a stance. A lot of people are like, great, you're taking a stance. Yeah. Like, that's fine. But the fact that he's doing the ad with focus on the family. So while they're telling the story of him and his birth, he's in a sense coming off as a spokesperson for Focus on the Family, who also has some values that seem very anti-gay, to be kind of blunt.
Yeah, and on the gay issue, a couple of years ago, the United Church of Christ, I believe, tried to air a Super Bowl ad and was rejected.
That's right. Yeah.
That's right.
And it was because they were gay friendly. They were like trying to welcome the gay community.
Yeah, they
to
called
church.
It too liberal.
Right. Yeah, it's too conservative. I don't know.
The whole thing is that it's one of those ads that like wouldn't run otherwise. It seemingly wouldn't run otherwise, but you get a name like Tebow, and of course it draws even more attention to it.
This definitely seems like a departure from the usual policy.
Yeah, like just be safe, just run beer ads, and show scantily clad women, and everybody's going to be happy during the Super Bowl.
I'm not okay with him getting special treatment for this. I'm okay with this ad running, just like I would have been okay with the United Church of Christ ad running. If they're going to pay the money for it and make it, and it's not going to be like totally outrageous, I'm okay with it, but... You know, if he's getting special treatment on this ad, that's not cool.
I feel like one of the stories that came out as a result of it this week has been that CBS or whoever is looking to run more ads like that now and is open to the possibility of more ads like that in the future. So Tebow's just paving ways. Once again, paving roads.
Well, I heard that, but, like, that's a real – it's, like, kind of revisionist history now. Because, like, you set a precedent that you're not going to run this ad bad, and then you change it for the – like, they might run it now, but it's like, oh, well, now there's not this liberal ad that wants to be run now.
And whether or not they stick to that if another liberal-type ad comes their way, who knows. But where do we stand on this?
Bad business decision for CBS if that's what they're going to do. I mean, this is not what people want to see during the Super Bowl.
That's the other thing. Nobody wants to be, like, watching the game, and then all of a sudden, like, Tebow's talking about how, like, if he was aborted, like – the world will be completely different. It's very sobering, very striking during the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
I mean,
we're used to seeing, like, ridiculous stuff and, like you said, beer ads.
Yeah.
It's pretty much all we want.
Yeah, just beer, chips, and cars. Like, that's the Super Bowl. So.
But, I mean, from the perspective of this group and the Tebow family, I mean, this is what it's all about here. You're hitting the biggest audience you possibly could with your message, and you've got a very visible person who's, for the most part, pretty well-liked, so... I mean, this is about as good a chance as you can get.
Yeah.
Right.
Football fans, too. Like, of course, they're going to Tebow, like, a recognizable personality. Yeah.
If moving aside, like, if CBS is going to at least open the playing field to, like, all spectrums in that sense now, besides that, like, I mean, do I necessarily really want to see a pro-life or pro-choice ad during the Super Bowl? No, not really. But it's like, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, to me, like, this, it's, like, kind of become this huge deal. And, like, somebody put it great today that I read. I don't remember who it was. They were like, you know, like they were saying they wouldn't necessarily do the ad, but, you know, if you're watching the ad, it's not going to ruin the game. It's 30 seconds, turn away, to change the channel, talk to somebody. Like, in the end, it really doesn't matter, and I kind of agree with that point.
You got
to
pee sometime. I mean, might as well do it then.
And who knows? Maybe in the end it makes a difference. Maybe maybe another Tebow is born into this world as a result of this commercial.
I'm going to try to hold out till the Who performance.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Although Pete Townsend.
That's right.
Sex offender, there's
something to look out for,
down in South Florida to warn
they
about
They have
him.
To.
They might arrest Pete Townsend during the halftime show. He's going to be out in the open. Got to get to him.
I'm a little, like, surprised at how big of a deal this has become. I guess I shouldn't have been because everything with Tebow has blown way out of proportion. But, I mean, is the fact that Tebow and his mom are pro-life news? No. Is the fact that he, you know, was almost aborted news? Well, it was 5 years ago when everybody first heard about it. I mean, this isn't really that big of a deal. Focus on the Family raises a few eyebrows, but really, you know, this isn't going to be anything ridiculous. He's not going to come out and start, like, screaming at anyone in this ad. It's not going to be 30 seconds of him looking at the camera and screaming at everyone who's pro-choice. I mean, it's not going to be that big of a deal. And like Tebow said this week, I think he said yesterday, he really didn't think it would have this much hype or buzz, but it's something he believes in, and it's just, it's, quote, it's me and my mom showing love for each other, and that's pretty much what it's about. I like the showing love for each other. It's like props to his mom.
Shout out to my mom.
Yeah,
Shout out to my mom.
I mean, you got to remember with this stuff, like, this is what Tebow wants.
Yeah.
He said this many times. Like, he got to this point in football, he got this public profile, and he's going to use it to spread his faith and spread what he believes in. And I mean, this isn't going to stop. And for the people saying, I do agree with this philosophy a little bit, that if you're going into the NFL and you're a rookie, shut your mouth. Like, don't do anything to stand out. Just work your way into a team. You'll be more respected that way. But this isn't just like some random guy I was shooting off at the mouth. Like, he said from day one, this is what it's going to do. And until now, it's been nothing but good for him.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change now. I mean, I'm sure he's not going to walk in the locker room and start preaching to people when he gets to his NFL team, but whenever, well, I mean, not like right from the get-go. Okay. If he does, he'll probably, I'm sure he's going to run a Bible study.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not going to be like out in the open or anything. You know, it's, I don't understand why all this stuff gets blown up as big as it does when he's said so many times this is what he's going to do. This isn't news. This is just a continuation of what everyone knew would happen.
Well, two things. One, it's Tebow, so it's a big deal. And two, it's abortion, so it's a big deal. Yeah. You combine the two, and it's out of control.
It's the biggest thing ever.
Yeah, exactly. It's the biggest political issue, the biggest political and entertainment issue of all time when you combine these two. I don't know. It's something that's, it's going to be an issue going forward. It's going to be, I don't know, maybe if you'd taken something less controversial than the pro-life stance, it wouldn't have been quite as big of a deal, but that's drawn so much. Like, that's probably what drew in Sarah Palin. You know, I'm assuming everybody doesn't care what Sarah Palin thinks on every issue, but I guess abortion will be close to that family with the what's her name.
Exactly.
So, I don't know, it's going to be a big deal going forward. They're going to run the ad, deal with it. Like you said, like McCall said, you got to pee sometime.
If you were an NFL team, would this have any impact whatsoever on draft team? Does it affect his marketability at all to either one of you?
It definitely shouldn't. I saw one anonymous team, someone, I don't know who it was, saying it would. Kind of like the if you're a rookie, shut your mouth kind of theory. It should not at all. This is absolutely outrageous.
Where's
like
that?
If it doesn't matter.
If you're dumb, it should, because you didn't see this coming. But if you're smart and you knew the guy anyway, it shouldn't surprise you and it shouldn't matter because that's who he is and you were cool
with
him anyway.
There's no one that dumb running an NFL team, right?
Nah.
Like,
there shouldn't be any like evaluation period
out there.
like you said, I get what you're saying. Like, if somebody just starts shooting off at the mouth right now and causing problems, then you'd have to sit back and say, okay, what's this guy really like? What's he really going to be like when he gets to the NFL? Kind of like what they had to do with Percy when he failed his drug
exactly.
test. But with Tebow, he's doing exactly what you knew, what he's always done. So this isn't really anything different.
It's like if, I don't know, if Ndamukong Suh came out and was like, all of a sudden he's got a really controversial stance. Maybe you look at him and you're like, okay, is he just, you know, is he just shooting off at the mouth? Is he a little unpredictable? Is he hard to rein in? But it's Tebow. Like, you expect this. You see this coming anyway. So I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a deal. We'll deal with it. The country can deal with it. Sarah Palin can deal with it.
Well, I'll say this. Allegedly, Peyton Manning's reputation is about to take a huge hit.
Why is that?
There's supposedly some scandal going to break on the internet about him and his wife who may be getting divorced.
Oh, no.
That is supposed to, as it was put to me, make Tiger Woods look like a family man. I can't imagine. There's no way this is true, first of all. But if it is, you got to snatch up Tebow because he's going to be the new Peyton Manning. Like, as far as like the clean cut quarterback guy.
That America loves.
Is this going to release before the game?
I don't know.
Because, some of us have to make picks, slash possibly, you know, if it were legal, wager money on this game, and, you know, that could affect the man's psyche. He's such a mental man.
Yeah, oh, no.
I mean, I expect the worst, because it's probably not going to be true, but it could still affect, you know, what you're talking about. But I heard it from people who had read it on, like, several Colts message boards and NFL message boards, and then I was looking online, I found a couple blogs mentioning him and his wife are getting divorced, and there was news to follow later. There's been nothing solid yet, but there's rumblings, just like there were rumblings with Tiger Woods on very disreputable sites when all this stuff started, and it turned out to be true. So,
very
true. I hope not.
Is it coming out of New Orleans, all this news? Is that where it's all coming from?
I don't think so.
I mean, think about it. She's a woman. She's possibly angry. What better time to release anything than he's going for a second Super Bowl?
It is a great time. You know, and when the whole Tiger Woods thing happened, I was having a discussion maybe with some of you guys, like, what athlete would be more shocking than Tiger Woods to have this stuff happen? I didn't even think of Peyton Manning. That's how far on the other side he is. Like, I didn't even include him in the discussion of who would be the most shocking, because I forgot about him.
Who came up on that list?
I'm trying to remember. There were some good ones that were just like, Roger Federer was up there for sure.
Yeah.
Like, Roger Federer would totally blow me away.
Yeah, ironically, a friend of Tiger.
Well,
he's in Switzerland, so we don't actually know what happens there. It's just
because what happened in Switzerland stays in Switzerland.
you know the old saying. there were a few others. I can't remember. It was kind of like the steroid discussion of who would be worse than, you know, Maguire and Bonds and all them. So, Peyton Manning, I think, would have to be at the top of the list as far as I'm concerned.
You know who wouldn't be on that kind of list? the other guy who's up at the Senior Bowl for Florida right now, Riley Cooper. That was an awkward transition into Riley Cooper Senior Bowl talk. He's officially given up baseball and is going into the NFL is his thing now. Do we think that's the right move, right?
I guess, because I've only heard that he's really terrible at playing baseball from anyone who's seen him play baseball, although the scouts continually like say he had potential. Yeah, sure, great. Apparently he's done pretty well at the Senior Bowl this week, so props to him. I really couldn't tell you how good a wide receiver Riley Cooper is going to be.
They say he's made some good catches and everything up there. He's looked good.
To me, he just doesn't shout NFL wide receiver, but I guess I could be wrong.
Well, I'll tell you this. His left arm is 32 1/4 inches, and his left hand is 10 1/8 inches. So
Interesting.
That is right in the target zone for NFL receiver.
Interesting.
God, I hate all this stuff.
What was the other thing? Tebow's right arm is longer than his left arm?
Yeah, right arm's a little longer than his left.
Great. Well, this is why we
that
have
changes
this,
also this is, everything I think about.
Oh, no, he can stiff-arm people better with that arm now, which is
very
good. Very
important.
Ball. Yeah.
So,
I hate the Senior Bowl.
I don't know. I think Cooper could be okay. I was a little surprised by the baseball thing, although I guess I shouldn't have been. I should have seen it coming because he lies about everything.
See, that's why he wouldn't be on the...
Right. He talks a lot of trash. I mean, before the Sugar Bowl, he was talking about how... At length, he was talking about how baseball was a career for him because he doesn't have to take shots before games. He'll be able to walk when he's older. It's such a better game for his health. And then he went on talking trash about how he was the best hitter on the baseball team, but he got benched for no reason and blah, blah, blah.
But the coach hated him or whatever.
I should have looked at those two statements beside each other and gone, yeah, this is all BS. I think it's the right move. I think he's actually, you know, a pretty decent receiver. He's not going to be – he does not need to be in a position where he's the number one guy.
Or the number two guy. I think he needs to be a three or four guy.
Right. Put him with Peyton Manning, he'll be a pro bowler.
Yeah.
If Peyton Manning can survive whatever's about to come down the pipe.
Oh, jeez. You put him and Riley Cooper together and I'm afraid things could just get worse.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, yeah, I think you put him in a third or fourth receiver role somewhere he can just come in. He's a good blocker. That's going to be good for him. I don't know. He'll do fine. I think going to the NFL is the right move. Plus, I've heard of the baseball stories, and you can't strike out at half your at-bats and go to the major leagues.
You don't want to get stuck in the minor leagues either for a long period of time and get bounced around. I mean, Riley Cooper in Wichita, no one wants to see that.
All right, and before we move on into men's basketball stuff, let's hit up the latest recruiting news. DeMar Dorsey switched his commitment to FSU despite being in a video prominently featured on ESPN.com with fellow Gators commit Jonathan Dowling. McCall, you're a big fan of that video. What did you think of Dorsey?
Pretty awesome video. Great performance by Dorsey. I especially like the part where he says he'll be there for 3 years, 4 years. We'll have to see what happens or whatever the end of the
whatever story. It takes.
Whatever it takes, yeah.
Basically, whatever it takes to get him to the NFL.
Right, yeah. So that was great commitment, and so it should come as no surprise that his commitment fell apart soon after, and he's now headed to FSU.
I actually heard a rumor that Florida kind of pushed him away?
No, that's actually that's true. That's actually being reported.
Okay.
Which is rare in recruiting. Why is interesting to me? I'm not sure.
Well, you think you get Elam, you get some of the other guys. I don't know. I hope Dorsey stayed just so he would knock Elam out of a potential starting position because I hate Matt Elam already.
Yeah, what I saw was that it was because like he was just playing the game too much.
Yeah.
They thought that like in a week they might get punked and like he would just he would switch at the very last second. So they're like, "All right, you're ridiculous, you're not really worth this. We're going to go try to find someone who might be not as good, but like we know we're going to get him."
That's very streetwise talk from Phil. He's playing the game. He didn't want to get punked.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
That's a good strategy. I didn't think of that. I was trying to figure out why. I mean, they have a ton of defensive backs committed, but I mean, not all of them are as good as failure.
Not as good as DeMar Dorsey.
Not as good as DeMar Dorsey. So, I don't know. That was confusing me. But what Phil says makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And whether that's true or not, I'm going to choose to believe it. Anyway, Dorsey is a safety from Boyd Anderson in Lauderdale Lakes. And he's in the ESPN 150. Which
has everybody else in Florida's recruiting class.
Yeah. They have him ranked as the number two safety behind Elam. Rivals has him ranked a little lower, but either way, he's really good.
Yeah.
So good pickup for FSU there.
Yeah.
If they hold on to him,
Who knows? He could still be playing the game, as Phil said.
I kind of like the move if it's true that like I think schools do that more often. Kind of. I mean, it's all we never really hear all of everything. So there's a lot of times where like kids may look like prima donnas, but then like the schools kind of put them in that position.
Yeah, you
don't. But I'm kind of a fan if like a kid's screwing around too much, just we don't watch it anymore.
Yeah, if kids being overly dramatic, like making like seem too much about him, like that he doesn't care enough about the school, just drop him. Like especially if you're Florida and you have such an a wealth of talent coming your way.
I can't help but be reminded of women in this discussion.
Exactly.
But the problem is, for every school, like the behavior of these recruits and women need to be changed overall. And the only way that's going to happen is if there are more of this instance happening. They're like,
yeah,
you're going to be like this? Fine, we're cutting you loose. Same. I don't want to talk to you anymore. Don't call. But then the problem
I don't know
is,
if you're talking about men or coaches
problem,
right now.
The problem is, yeah, you're not supposed to. But the problem is there's going to be Florida State's, and I'm not, you know, blaming Florida State.
Just welcome the needy girls.
It could be anybody else. Like, yeah, any school would do this. Yeah. Florida's probably doing this right now.
To someone else.
Where they're going
to
take her or him in and keep this going where this behavior is acceptable.
Yeah.
And it's not acceptable.
We're preaching here.
Exactly.
But their class overall right now, they got 25 commits. I'm really impressed that 11 have already enrolled.
Yeah.
That's very surprising to me. That's a lot of people to have enrolled.
11 good recruit, good recruits, too.
Yeah,
so.
And the more this stuff happens, I know Texas is big on getting people committed real early and getting them enrolled real early. The more this happens,
they can't leave.
The more we're going to hear about an early signing period, which is something I'm sure Urban is going to talk about next Wednesday for the signing day press conference.
Yeah, something we're going to talk about probably come after signing day when we talk a little bit more about recruiting once the class is finalized. But the other recruiting news, what's his name, McFarland, the tight end, is no longer gray-shirted, as we talked about on the Monday podcast, for reasons we did not fully understand why he was being gray-shirted. You can argue it was to keep open the scholarship spot, which they no longer need with Dorsey gone. You could argue it was grades. None of that stuff we really know for sure. All that we do know now is that he is no longer gray-shirting. He's going to come to Florida. So that is another scholarship being taken up. But that's pretty much it for recruiting. Like I said, we'll get to a lot more of that next week. Signing day is next Wednesday, correct?
Yeah, the 3rd.
February 3rd.
Or the
3rd.
Yeah. So a lot more recruiting stuff to look forward to after that.
You have to say this. Thank goodness Urban Meyer's back. So we have him for the signing day press conference and not Steve D'Azio. That would have been a train wreck. All these different kids and, like, trying to keep all that straight. It would have been a mess.
Steady in the boat. Steady in the boat.
All the rambling.
There's no day that I enjoy more than national signing day.
I know. It's like Christmas for me and Phil.
I wake up in the morning. I turn on ESPN. There's recruiting coverage. I mean,
he's on ESPNU
all day. I go to a
press
conference. I hear about how great these 18-year-olds are, which like one or two of them may ever play good or in the NFL.
But you know what, Phil? They're not just great football players. They're high-caliber people.
Human beings. Yeah, I know.
Because that's what they recruit here at Florida.
How about like we just change the signing day press conference and we only ask Urban questions about his health?
Yeah.
And
put
like
a little
when
bait switch
eating
on him.
Like, I want to know, like, 9 a.m. the next day, is he done?
Yeah.
Or is it like...
Urban, when you finish like, this press conference, yeah, are you done?
Are you getting on a plane?
Are you giving the key to Steve D'Azio when you leave this press conference?
Anyway, yeah, we can move on. Recruiting's almost over, thank God.
All right, let's move on. Finally talk about some Florida men's basketball. Florida is now on a 4-game SEC winning streak, entering their game this Sunday against Tennessee in Knoxville, which I'll be making my way up to shortly. Florida's coming off an 87-71 win against Georgia, a very impressive game. I thought it was maybe the most complete game they've played since their non-conference schedule. Three players scored more than 20 points in Irving Walker, Kenny Boynton, and Alex Tyus. Walker was great in the first half. Boynton and Tyus scored 15 each in the second half. Really complete performance from them. I think if they can keep up this kind of play, they're gonna at least stay competitive in every game. They would have beat Vanderbilt if they played like this. They would have probably hung a little closer with Kentucky had they played like this and it hadn't just been Irving Walker. And they're gonna beat pretty much every other SEC team they come across if they can, you know, keep up this kind of effort. They're winning on the glass, which is something they didn't do at all at the beginning of the year. They're not turning the ball over as much, especially from Walker and Boynton. I don't know. I've been very impressed by them during this 4-game winning streak.
I believe there has to be an error on this box score, though. Is that zero fouls for Vernon Macklin?
Correct.
Zero fouls. Goodness.
I'd argue he was just kind of a non-fact. I mean, he had 12 points,
I mean,
but it was all dunks.
Right, yeah.
I'll take a step back and I'll admit it was all dunks this time, guys. All right? It was all dunks. There were very few hook shots.
Yeah, no, sadly, I didn't get to see this game. Everybody in the Gainesville area really sad. It was on some random-ass TV channel that you don't get unless you have 1,000 channels.
Macklin, like, might as well not have been there for me for most of the game.
Well, here's the thing, though. Had he not been, it would have been like Eric Murphy in the game, or it would have been Tyus at the center, and he would have been a little more.
Yeah.
He would have had a little more pressure on him.
It's really the trickle-down effect there, I guess.
He just doesn't do anything, though, really. It's disappointing for me, because that LSU game, I got real
high really
hopes.
You really had hopes,
yeah. Yeah, I was like, oh, man, he's playing well. Wrote a whole column on it.
It was like Phil with Kenny Cagey last
year. Yeah, right. I don't know.
It's a downfall.
I still feel like they need him to be effective. effective, like consistently.
I argue they don't really need a whole lot more. They need a couple more rebounds and maybe a couple more blocks than he gave.
How many rebounds did he have?
Three.
Three.
But here's the thing. Dan Werner led the team in rebounds with six. Nobody missed shots during that game. Both teams shot over 50%. So Dan Werner led the team in rebounds with six, and everybody else had like three or four.
Macklin traditionally, though, has not been getting
rebounds. No, he's not a great rebounder. Because he just gets pushed around. Because he's athletic, but he's not big, and he's not a force down low. Which is, sure, he's going to need to be that, but I don't know if he needs to be that against, like, Tennessee. He needs to be that against, like, Mississippi State or Kentucky. Obviously, against Kentucky when they play them again. But, I don't know, I think they can win games when they keep playing like this. I mean, granted, they haven't played the best competition, but the things that they have shown, that they can make plays late in games, like they did against South Carolina and Arkansas, that they can out-rebound teams, which they've done in every SEC game they've won, and they didn't do in the two they lost. I don't know, that they can shoot from the outside, which Boynton and Walker did a little bit better. Boynton was 3-for-7, which is better than his usual, like, 1-for-7 efforts that he's been putting up in the rest of the SEC. Walker was 4-for-6. Irving Walker is not missing anymore, apparently.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean, I'm going to...
He's quit missing.
He just stopped.
Anymore.
Yeah. He decided, you know, the one thing that's really holding me back is missing, so I'm going to stop doing that.
That's a great point. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say Florida shooting over 50% is a... They're going to win a lot of games.
Well, yeah, as they should. Right. As they can out-rebound and shoot over 50%.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
I don't either. That's why I think the Macklin thing could end up being a bigger deal. Like, on their cold shooting nights, what are they going to do? I mean, they need to lock down on defense, but he's got to play defense inside, which he hasn't done a ton of.
Here's the thing, though. Look at the 50% shooting. Alex Tyus was 10 for 14. And most of the shots he's taking, other than the occasional mid-range jumper, aren't dumb. He got a lot of layups. He got a couple dunks. Good. Got some alley-oops. Even his mid-range jumpers, if he has confidence in them, and if he's making them as much as he did in this kind of game, keep taking them, because he's arguably their highest percentage shooter, other than Macklin, who just keeps missing layups.
Yeah, I mean, a pretty good indication of them moving the ball around is that they had 32 made field goals on 20 assists. Like, that's not a whole lot of just doing your own thing.
Yeah,
so that's,
it's not Irv dribbling up the court and jacking up a three.
Yeah, exactly.
They definitely played a great game. I mean, it was against a bad team. Georgia's really good. And also, I mean, the press could not have been more effective.
Jesus. It hadn't been that effective since FSU, Michigan State.
Georgia was not handling the press well. Uh-uh. And then Billy brought up a really good point. I mean, Florida made so many shots or getting into the press every time, pretty much, and then forcing more turnovers, getting easy baskets, and then they're back in the press again.
The snowball.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, for Georgia to shoot, what'd they shoot?
They
almost
shot
60%.
28 of 47. They shot 59.6%.
Yeah. And no, 60%.
57% from three, too.
They lost by 17.
Yeah.
Or whatever, right?
Yeah, 16. Yeah.
Still, that's absurd to shoot that well and not be close.
Yeah. I think that's just a sign of how well Florida played in this game. Right. They had everything going, and like you said, they just stole the ball. They stole the ball, 12 times? Georgia had 19 turnovers?
Yeah.
That's the kind of game Florida needs to play. And I don't know if they can do it against a team like Tennessee, but they've certainly been able to do it against the bad teams in the SEC in the last couple. Well, Arkansas's not bad. South Carolina beat Kentucky. I don't know. The SEC's... Vanderbilt's the only undefeated team in the SEC right now. A couple teams have one loss, but everybody else has two or three. I don't think it's that uneven of a playing field to believe that Florida could come out and finish third in the SEC East.
I mean, I don't think it's like out of the, you know, it's off the table that they could win the conference. I mean, I certainly would not have predicted that. I certainly wouldn't think it's likely, but I don't think it's impossible. I mean, they could definitely do it if they play well.
Mm.
I mean, I see them stumbling a few times in games that they shouldn't lose. That's what was really positive about this Georgia game was that this is the kind of game they've lost a lot in the past. I mean, they hadn't won four straight SEC games since 2007.
Yeah.
And last year, they had some pretty... I mean, the SEC was not good last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great this year, but it's a little better. And they had some stretches last year where they definitely needed to put together four or even five wins. And now to be in this situation is great. To come off that buzzer-beater win against South Carolina and take care of Georgia, who's not a very good team.
Yeah. But like you said, it's encouraging that they could come off and avoid the letdown. Because I'd say they let down for about 2 or 3 minutes in the beginning. They're like, oh, God, this is going to be a repeat of the Richmond game from earlier in the year where they just came out with no energy. They came out flat.
I think that's what we all thought. And they were just like Richmond.
I was there. Right, it was fresh on my mind. And that they were just going to be slow and play poorly. But then Irving Walker sort of took the team on his back. Yeah, Phil loves Irving Walker now. And he sort of got him out of that. The press especially helped get him out of that. They're capable of breaking themselves out of that sort of when they get stuck in a rut, which you have to be encouraged by.
I think Florida started 1-for-7, and Georgia started like 6-for-6.
I think they made their first field goal like 5 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
It was a rough start.
And then they still finished the first half shooting 51%. Yeah. So, I mean, they really got hot, and a lot of that was Irv.
Yeah, mostly it was Irv. But Irv's doing a lot of things. Phil, you can talk about this since you're the Irv guy now. He's getting into the lane. he's doing a lot of different things better than he did in his freshman year, which is strange because he struggled at the beginning of the year shooting, getting into the lane, getting to the free throw line. He's doing all of those things now. He's doing them all well. He's not just driving into the lane wildly and realizing he needs to do something with the ball after he gets up into the air. He's very under control. I don't know if he's trusting his teammates more. Do you want to talk about Irv and what he's
doing
lately?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's been a really interesting transformation for me because I thought Irving Walker as a point guard for the whole year was going to be something Florida was going to have to overcome, kind of like a slight disadvantage. I just thought that at times he would not be a great point guard. I thought he could score, and he's really quick, and he can pass the ball well sometimes. Like, he could do everything great at times, but I thought that the times he didn't play well would kind of outnumber the times he played really well, and he couldn't have proved me more wrong. I mean, yeah, he had a really bad shooting slump there for a while, but, I mean, you have to shoot your way out of it. He did. He's on fire now. And like I said, and as you said, he's not over-penetrating. He's not dribbling too much. He's really playing just really, really well right now, and it doesn't seem fluky to me. It seems like he can keep playing this well as the season continues.
Yeah, and he had his first career double-double against Georgia, 21 points, 10 assists. A Chris Paulian performance. He also had 3 steals.
Yeah, great.
And 3 rebounds. I don't know. It was a very, very strong performance from him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him getting many more double-doubles, but yeah, I mean, he can definitely, he's shooting well. He's like, he doesn't have to take 15 shots to score 17 points.
Yeah, that's the thing. He took 10 shots.
Yeah, exactly. And
he got the line 12 times.
Yeah, now that he's snapped out of his slump, there shouldn't be too many, like, 0-for-5 performances from beyond the arc. And I think he's going to be key for him as they keep going on.
Just as important as him is going to be Kenny Boynton, who had maybe, I don't know if we'll call this a rare shooting night, and that he only missed half his shots. He went 8-for-16, 3-of-7 from 3, and scored 21 points.
I mean, that's a good night for him.
That's
right
a really good night for him, yeah. He's a high-volume guy. We know this. And then Alex Tice. I think Alex Tice might be the most important guy to this team's success when in games that, you know, they're going to struggle a little bit in. Because he's the only guy down low who can score, you know, consistently and create his own shot a little bit. He's going to be very important to this team going forward, especially if he can keep rebounding. If he tries, he can be good. But sometimes it's like you look at him and he doesn't really seem to care out there. He's cared a lot during these last couple games. I think he's scored in double digits in 11 straight games. He's been on a tear lately. I've been very impressed by Alex Tice, so... All right, what do we all think of the Tennessee game coming up this Sunday in Knoxville? Tennessee, obviously, a little bit of drama around their program lately. Tyler Smith was dismissed.
Yeah, they also have lost 2 in a row, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Correct? Yeah,
they lost to Vanderbilt and Georgia, ironically.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think this ends well for Florida because you have a Tennessee team that really needs to stop a skid at home. Bruce Pearl's a really good coach. And then you have, you know, Florida, who's playing well. I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to be overconfident necessarily. Obviously, Tennessee's ranked 14th, but I don't see it ending well for Florida.
I mean, it's going to be a tough environment based on when I went there last year. It was a really good atmosphere. It's really loud. They definitely show up when Florida comes to town, even when Florida's not good. So I don't really know, though. I mean, I don't know what you're going to get out of Florida on any given night. I mean, if they come out and they're going to shoot 53% again, sure, they could win.
Yeah.
If they come out and they have a cold shooting night, I think they could get run out of the gym. But it's all so contingent on how well both teams are going to shoot that I don't know. But I do agree with Phil that coming off a 2-game skid and at home, you know, Tennessee is going to show up for this game pretty strong.
Yeah, and Florida before this little stretch has done very poorly with success in terms of they come out overconfident, they come out with no energy, which leads me to believe that the hostile crowd is actually going to be good for them. I think, because that's going to keep them focused, keep them, you know, at least it'll give them the nobody believed in us factor going. Because it's like when you come out and you have your home crowd, and the home crowds here aren't really that good, you're getting very little energy from around you. I think this is actually going to help them. I don't know, I'll make my prediction for the game when we do Gator Guarantees, but I don't know, I think Tennessee does have a lot of motivation coming into this, obviously. But the fact that Tennessee is still a highly ranked team right now, they won't be probably after the 2 losses to Georgia and Vanderbilt, that's going to give Florida motivation. You know, Florida obviously wants to keep up the success, try to get to the top of the SEC East or as close as they can to Vanderbilt. So it's going to be an interesting game. Like you said, I'm looking forward to Thompson Bowling. It's a very exciting environment. I'm very excited about that. So
Tennessee still has a lot of weapons.
That's right.
They still have a lot of weapons.
That's right. Answer Tyler Smith. They still have a lot of weapons. That's the other thing, actually, that I was going to mention before that's good for Florida is Tennessee's lack of depth now, thanks to this little legal trouble, is going to help Florida out because Florida has no depth. You know, they got 8 guys. Although if you ask, who was it in the quote, Irving Walker, we asked about that, like how important it is to have him and Tyus and Boynton shooting well. He goes, oh, I think it's more than just me, Alex, and Kenny. keep in mind, Florida has an 8-person rotation. That's three. Since we also need Macklin, Parsons, Shipman, and Murphy. Those were the only ones who said. Who's missing from this group? Anybody? Anybody?
A certain thunderous personality.
Thunderous personality. Dan Warner. Not mentioned by Irving Walker in that group. Warner scored, how many, what did he score? 2 points, had 6 rebounds. Still
had
played
nice,
28
had a
minutes.
Nice pull-up jumper, and he took a charge.
The ultimate Dan Warner play, he took a charge.
He took his lunch pail and he went to work.
All right, let's wrap up the show with our Gator guarantees. We're going to predict one thing that's going to happen probably in the next week of UF Sports. Start with Phil.
All right, as I alluded to, I don't think the Florida-Tennessee men's basketball game is a particularly good matchup for the Gators, and I am guaranteeing, I'm Gator guaranteeing
yeah,
that
you are.
Florida will lose by 14 points or more.
14, that's been a good number for us on this podcast.
I know, it came to mind at the last second.
All right, there you go. I'm going to make the opposite guarantee. I'm going to say Florida wins in Tennessee, but it comes down to the wire. It's going to be like made free throws in the last minute. Possibly another buzzer beater. I won't say a Chandler Parsons buzzer beater, but it's going to come down to the wire, and Florida's going to pull out a very close win for their fifth straight in the SEC.
I'm impressed you restrained yourself from giving Chandler Parsons some love. You do that whenever you get a chance. I'm very remarkable self-control.
Yeah, I try.
I'm going to say that the charges against former Florida cornerback Wandy Pierre-Louis are dropped this week.
Ah, they weren't already?
No, it's still under investigation.
Okay.
But the whole thing's real shady, and I don't know. The biggest thing to me, not just his girlfriend showing up in court and saying like the whole thing was a misunderstanding.
Yeah, just kidding.
Sorry.
I didn't mean that.
In the police report, Wandy's like this animal running around in her apartment, choking her and like doing all this horrible stuff, and then she just gets away. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She just gets away.
Yeah, she just
like rampaging through her apartment.
You know what the joke was, Mike. Did you listen to our episode a couple
times? Yes, I know the joke that Wandy can't tackle. But from the way it's described in the police report, Wandy was getting it done in that apartment. This was pretty, like,
Wandy had a death-like grip, you could say, as a tackle.
Graphic in the police report was that he was choking her with a shirt and then explained to her that he was doing it because it wouldn't leave fingerprints.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so detailed. I don't know how that could be wrong.
Yeah, this whole thing reeks of the Carl Johnson incident where it's like these terrible, graphic details and everybody's like really scared about it and she seems to be very serious and then, I'm just kidding. It's cool.
Well, at least Carl Johnson's whatever girl took a while to change her mind. Wani's...
Seemingly the next day.
Whatever, ex-girl. Yeah, seemingly the next day it changed your mind.
Either all these players are horrible criminals or somebody needs to be writing novels. And I'm not sure if the novelists are the women who are coming up with these stories or if it's the cops who are taking them down incorrectly but way more dramatic than they should be. I think that might be an aspect to all this legal trouble Florida's had is the reporting of crimes, both on the victim side and with the police reports that they're taking down. Because, I mean... Sometimes if you go all Edgar Allan Poe on your police report, you can screw up a case, and I think that's kind of what's happened in a few of these situations.
Interesting. All right, so two related Gator guarantees and one that's completely off the board, something to look forward to when we come back for our next show. I believe our next show might be the Mary Wise podcast next Wednesday. Send any questions you have for that as well as any feedback you have on this or any other show to podcast@alligator.org. Hit us up on Twitter. Maybe Facebook. I say every time I think we're back in the Facebook game, but I never really get on that. So any other outlet you want to contact us at, please do, and we'll take it to heart, especially questions from Mary Wise. I'm very excited about that podcast. Something to look forward to. McCall, you got one other thing here? You raised your hand as if you had something else.
Oh, no, I was saying I'm going to update the Facebook thing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so that was worth talking about. So now go look on our Facebook at facebook.com/alligatorpodcast and comment or like or whatever you do on Facebook now when you see something coming from one of the fan pages. So we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry!